This episode of the PHP Architect Podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Website Spark, a new program for web pros to help them grow their business and get access to Microsoft's tools for nearly no cost. Learn more and sign up for Website Spark at WebsiteSpark.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the PHP Architect Podcast. Today is once again time for an interview, and with me is Marcus Whitney. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Marco.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Not bad. Not bad. Thank you. You're based in Nashville, right?
Correct.
So there's the typical lame question I always ask every person I interview. How's the weather?
It's been really rainy for 12 days. But tonight it's clear.
Oh, that's cool. That's excellent. How many years have you been in Nashville?
I'm just rounded up 9 years this September.
Oh, wonderful. Where are you originally from?
I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York.
Cool. So, Marcus and I haven't really connected for a few years now, but Marcus used to do actually some work for a PHP architect. So I thought that might have been a good opportunity to sort of lead into the entire discussion for tonight. Why don't you start from there? What did you use for us, and how did you get involved in PHP?
I got involved in PHP. It was my second professional job as a developer, and I inherited a bunch of technology at this boutique studio, and they had a bunch of different web jobs for different clients, and they were in all different languages. And the one that I loved the most was the PHP application. Before that, I was a Cold Fusion developer. I just started developing all the projects at that studio in PHP after that, including a proprietary piece of software that they ended up deploying and still have to this day called FireSign. And then went on to work at a company in Nashville called Emma Email Marketing, and wrote their platform also on LAMP using PHP 4 and writing a little framework around it. So, you know, I really cut my teeth as a professional developer doing my first big software projects using PHP. And at that time when I was using PHP, it was PHP 4. There was a lot of talk about PHP 5. It was when frameworks were starting to become in vogue. This is prior to Rails. There was lots of different activity going on around frameworks and going on around Pair, and you know, where was PHP going to actually progress to become an enterprise level language. So the first thing was I ended up applying to speak at PHP Works in Toronto and came up, and I believe, I'm not sure if I can verify this, but I believe that my session was timed during Rasmus's session, and I think that was probably the origination of the term Rasmus. When you're speaking at the same time as Rasmus Leerdorf and nobody goes to your session, so that was my first experience speaking at a conference with PHP, and then from there, you know, I just got to meet all the people in the community, and it was such a great time and a great community, and I believe that's where I met you. And then I guess about a year later, I started the Pro PHP podcast and worked on that with Chris Cornut. And then that introduced an opportunity for me to work with PHP Architect. So I was doing some editing work for you guys. I helped out with a PHP tech conference, I think, that happened probably 4 years ago. And was working on an online repository called Art at the time, and was helping to edit and collect articles for that, and also helping to develop some of the website.
That's right. And I guess once you've been Rasmus, you can only go upwards from there.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I was a complete unknown, so actually getting Rasmus helped me out a lot.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I guess at that time we didn't really have a good understanding of how to schedule our sessions so that things like these wouldn't happen. or at least, you know, so
as
that we
in
could.
don't schedule a complete unknown next to Rasmus Lyra of the creator of the language, right?
Yeah, well, really don't schedule anybody next to
Yeah,
Rasmus
right, right.
In your, and you're pretty much set. That's why Rasmus gets the keynotes.
That's right.
It's because nobody wants to go up against him. So tell us, you mentioned that you worked at Emma for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I like to point out for the people who listen to the podcast is that sometimes it's not immediately obvious when PHP is used in environments that have, you know, the need for a really high throughput. And, you know, Emma handles email marketing, so I figured they probably have a really large environment. They have to deal with a lot of traffic, a lot of requests, a lot of computational power. Can you give us an idea of how big the data sets, how pervasive the application that you were building there was?
It was huge. I mean, first of all, we had a very short time in which to rewrite a prototype of the application into something that was actually going to scale and be able to meet the demands of the business, because the founders had done a really good job at branding and selling the business proposition, and so it was really just about delivering on the promise, and that was a technology problem, not a customer service problem, not a company problem, but a technology problem. And at the time, you know, there was Perl, there was PHP, you know, Python certainly was not, you know, a strong choice for a web app language at that time. There was no Ruby for certain. So we were a startup and just did not have a lot of money to buy one of these high powered mailers like Wes Furlong works on, for example. So we just used PHP as much as possible. We wrote our own framework so that we could develop modules quickly and roll out the features necessary to meet the demands of the business. And then at the mailing level, we just leveraged the socket support that PHP provided us with, and just interacted with a Postgres database that was designed in an object-oriented way. And it was a really big data set, and there were a lot of transactions. You know, we'd have to send millions of emails in very short periods of time, and you deal with all of the click-through traffic from that. I think a lot of people don't really realize just how much traffic an email marketing service can conjure up, but it's pretty intense. I mean, more than the average, much more than the average web property could, because you've got, you know, all of your customers on there, and they'll send, you know, several hundred thousand emails a day, and all those click-throughs that come through, that's real web traffic. And I do have to say that we never really encountered a problem at the PHP level. It was always about database design and scaling the database, you know, but PHP performed beautifully.
Well, you know, when you look at the fact that most applications really, in most applications, PHP is almost never the bottleneck. It's usually something external to it, mostly because at the end of the day, for the most part, PHP is used as a very simple scripting language, which is exactly what it's good at. But the reality is that a lot of developers just are not very familiar with designing that.
At the time, the type of, well, we built all of the features of our business from scratch. It wasn't until much later on that we started employing third-party systems for CRM services like Salesforce. So we built the billing system, we built the CRM. And, you know, it definitely got to the point, and I'll also say that one of the key differentiators about email marketing businesses and why that industry is so successful and continues to grow is because there's a huge challenge around deliverability, and you have to really design a lot of intelligence around the way that you send out mail, the timing of it, how you talk to the different the different mail servers at the different ISPs to preserve your reputation. And so we started just finding a need for really, really, really complex SQL. And at the time, this was 2003, keep in mind, MySQL just wasn't really there. It didn't have, store procedures and triggers and rules that were considered something you would take into production. It was early MySQL 4 stuff. And actually, the prototype of Emma was written on MySQL. We had 10 million rows in one of the tables representing mailings, and that was clearly becoming a huge bottleneck. So MySQL has come a long way, you know, in terms of its SQL 99 compliance and then also its ability to scale and deliver at that level of traffic. But at the time, Postgres was just a better solution. It allowed us to, prior to actually having table spaces or anything like that, it allowed us to segment our accounts via the object model, so we were able to inherit from base tables and spread the load out, which early on for us was critical, because we'd have some clients that would only have 300 people they were sending to, and some clients that would have 300,000, and when the mailings would start going out and it was all tapping our database, we didn't want for the person who was sending out to 300,000 to impact the person who was only sending to 300. So we had to figure out some way to quickly be able to segment that. And, you know, you're also dealing with the balance of what's the ideal way to design a scalable infrastructure and what do you have time to really do? For us, we were developers, not system architects by any means. And, we grew to be able to hire those people, and that changed the infrastructure of Emma greatly. But early on, we did what we were able to do quickly and to prevent any undue stress on the smaller clients. I think I would probably start with MySQL today. The clear-cut reasons why we made the choice for Postgres don't exist anymore. So I would definitely start with MySQL and say, okay, what things can we do? And that's not necessarily to advocate MySQL over Postgres, but from a resource perspective, just in terms of being able to hire developers, MySQL is just far more, pervasive than Postgres is, at least in my market. So I would probably start there, and then when I found I would hit a wall, I would know that I could look to Postgres for the potential to replace MySQL. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it's one thing that I was fortunate to learn early on is that there are some fantastic technologies out there, but you know, I started as a developer who was just kind of a hired gun, and I've grown to become an entrepreneur and a director of technology, if anything, at this point in my career. And you know, it's just you have to think about things holistically. You can't just think about what's the coolest technology. One of the reasons why I still reach for PHP is because of the number of developers out there, the length of time it's been around, the wealth of available libraries out there to do everything from web services integrating with Web 2.0 stuff out there to tying into low-level Linux things. It's just been around so long, and it's had to face so many challenges, and it's had to scale for so many internet giants that I know what it's capable of by what other people have done with it. I just can't say that for a lot of other technologies out there. So there's a bit of due diligence that needs to go into open source technology choices when you're doing it and you know that your business is going to depend on it. I think that all software is moving, at least all web-based software is moving into a place where they are having to embrace open source you know, methodologies and philosophies. So at this moment, I don't have any kind of evil big brother predictions about it. I think, you know, Oracle has been involved with MySQL for a while from the NODB perspective, and I haven't yet seen that rear its head to really create problems for the project. So, and MySQL is growing in lots of ways right now. There's the Drizzle project. There are document-oriented databases that are being from that group. So I don't see it being a problem. If anything, I see there being opportunities for MySQL to reach into corporate environments where before it might not have had a chance to do so. You know, Oracle is definitely by de facto, you know, the enterprise database, period. And I think that MySQL flying under that banner probably will open some doors for it that were closed previously. Right. Well, can I say one thing about that? What this is a great, great opportunity for us to watch for is we've seen technologies come from historically closed source companies become open source, right? So we saw Java get open source. Did we see we see Microsoft getting more serious, and I would say in a genuine way, as opposed to maybe what it was 5 years ago. I'd say now their open source initiatives are actually pretty genuine at this point. You know, we're seeing a lot of closed source companies having to adopt open source philosophies and actually open sourcing huge pieces of their code base. Adobe is another one. See what happens when, you know, a historically open source project moves closer and closer into the enterprise, right? Does the open source nature of it, does the community, does the licensing protect it? You know, I don't think we've ever seen a technology, an open source technology, a GPL-based technology like MySQL move this deep into, you know, the corporate engine. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to it. I left in September of 2007. I left in September 2007. I got to work with a friend and colleague of mine, Dave Delaney, on launching BarCamp Nashville right as I was leaving in August, and that was great. Kind of kickstarted a renaissance, if you will, in Nashville of just a digital community of all aspects, not just programmers, but, you know, social media people and just the whole gamut, people who are into web analytics, designers. We really developed our community here in Nashville a great deal over the last 2 years. And, you know, BarCamp Nashville was a big part of that. And then immediately after that, I launched my own little company called Remarkable Wit. And my mission was to establish more startups in Nashville, Tennessee, because I had a great time working at Emma. It was just dumb luck and chance that I got to work with such a great team of people, because I started there as a contractor. And, you know, about a month later, those guys, you know, hired me, and then I became a partner and director of technology. It was just, you know, an amazing opportunity and experience for me. And I wanted to have it again. And I also wanted to extend that opportunity to other people. So launched out Remarkable Wit to try and start startups, basically. And in 2008, after, you know, getting my feet under me and hiring a couple of employees, we actually picked up work with two startups that we had equity stakes in, and we worked with them throughout 2008, and then in 2009 we launched one of them, and it went well enough to get us to a place where we were able to complete a real round of funding on that. And so I've been focusing on that pretty exclusively from the startup perspective for the last 4 or 5 months, and that's called moontoast.com. We're going to launch that in November. And then when I focused all my energy into Moontoast and moved all of the development team from Remarkable Wit into Moontoast, I wanted to continue at least the work that I was doing to help develop the developer community in Nashville, because we had gotten to a point where the community in Nashville was really strong, but it was starting to really get lopsided, I felt and still do feel, around social media and web analytics and things like that. And my biggest concern was that we were not going to be able to sustain the community, because we weren't going to be able to create enough companies, because the depth of development was not what it really needed to be. And having been to PHP Works and PHP Tech, and also South by Southwest, and you know, just I've been to my fair share of conferences over the last 4 years. I know the impact that having a major technology focused event can have on a city. It can really transform it. So I set out to start one here, and I did it around the technologies that were near and dear to me. I'm not exclusive about them having to be open source, but that's what I like. So that's what I threw the conference around. And I do believe that open source technologies are not going to be any small part of the future of technology as we know it. So I do think it's a substantial way to enter into a real conference launch in Nashville. And so we started this thing called Enterprise Lamp out of Remarkable Wit. We just kind of shifted that company into more about thought leadership. So Enterprise Lamp is all about enterprise level open source technologies. I just leveraged Lamp because it's a familiar term for people, but the context in which I refer to Enterprise Lamp is not Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. It's acknowledging that's really the legacy of the open source web stack, but at this point it's matured and it's grown, it's diversified to really represent open source operating systems, open source web application servers, open source databases, and open source languages. So that's my definition of Enterprise Lamp. I don't co-opt the original Lamp term, but for Enterprise Lamp, it definitely encompasses more than just your standard Lamp stack. So we're covering PHP, Python, Perl, Baroque. And we're looking at that entire environment. We're looking at cloud environments. We're looking at App Engine, where you can run Python. We're just looking at all these different tools that are available to people now to be able to launch businesses or applications, you know, leveraging open source technologies.
So tell us a bit about this conference you're organizing.
Well, I'm really excited about it. It is... I believe the first conference of sort in Nashville, which is a big deal to me. And I think it's a big deal for our city, because we have three amazing industries that are incredibly tech impacted right now. We are definitely a major home for the music industry. A lot of people don't realize it, but we are a huge healthcare center for North America. Nashville has the Fortune 500 companies that control 40% of the hospitals in the nation. And we're also a publishing powerhouse. Ingram is here, and Lightning Source, which is their print-on-demand company, is the number one print-on-demand supplier for Amazon.com. So we've got three industries that are highly tech-impacted right now and have got to continue to invest in technology, especially web technology, and continue to make it more a platform for which to innovate their business models so that they can stay relevant. So I'm excited to be able to bring this conference to our city and be able to directly focus on both the CTOs and decision makers at the Enterprise Lamp Summit portion of it, and then also focusing on the developers, continuing to grow the talent base here at the Big Lamp Camp, which you're going to be keynoting at.
That's right. When you asked me to keynote, I thought, wow, they must be really desperate.
No, well, to me, I think you represent something very, very important to the developer community, which is you've consistently worked to advocate the importance of the developer community, I grew to respect that about you when I worked for you at PHP Architect for that period of time. Just a complete respect for the work that the open source development community put in, the PHP community in particular, and constantly working to innovate and provide greater resources for them to be better developers and playing to their passion. So, the fact that you launched your own startup, and I definitely admire and also kind of cringe at that because I know how hard that can be. I think it's fitting that you come keynote because, the conferences you've thrown have definitely had an impact on my career as a developer and also my own aspirations to throw a conference. I mean, I've seen you throw probably 20, or more at this point. I mean, what CodeWorks is kind of seven different stops. So, I mean, I just think, hey, if you can pull seven off in a week, I certainly can pull two off in 2 days, I hope.
So tell us, when are the Enterprise Lamp Summit and Camp taking place?
The Enterprise Lamp Summit starts on Thursday, November 6th. We're going to start with a mixer at the Icon, which is a new condo in Nashville's Gulch area, which is a totally LEED certified new metropolitan area. It's beautiful. We've got great restaurants and just a really sleek part of town. So we'll start there with a mixer. On Friday, that's when we'll really get down and dirty. That's the real day of the summit. That'll be at the AT&T building, or as we affectionately call it, the Batman building in town, because it looks like the Gotham City building with the two ears on it. That's going to be a full day of C-level open source luminaries. We've got Andy Gutman's CEO at Zend, Lee Congdon, who's the CIO of Red Hat, William Hurley, who's chief architect at BMC Software right now, Rommel, who's the VP of Emerging Technologies at Asurion, Kent Freeman, CIO at Ingram Digital, Josh Burke is CEO of PostgreSQL Experts and also part of the Technical Steering Committee for Open Source for America. So we've just got great representation to come and really talk about both the business and also technical merits of using all of these different open source technologies. And it's nice. I mean, definitely I had to represent PHP. That's my personal heritage, and I think an incredibly important part of the legacy. But, we're definitely covering all of these technologies. We get to cover Python, talking to John Rooning, who's the lead architect at Lulu. Some very amazing innovations happening in the Perl community that I had no idea about until about 2 months ago, but they've got this framework called Moose that's Perl 5, not Perl 6, obviously, but does just some amazing object-oriented things. I think it's going to be a great, well-rounded event where everybody can learn from everybody else, and we can also, celebrate where open source technology has come to this point, and also educate, the decision makers in these these key industries that impact the entire country, but definitely, you know, the city of Nashville, about the merits of open source technology, both from a case study perspective and also bringing the people who support these technologies in to present their different offerings.
Now, this initiative is actually part of a larger initiative that you're undertaking, right?
It is. Enterprise LAMP is being kickstarted by this conference, but ultimately, I want to see this develop into a long-term resource to advocate and educate to advocate the use of open source technology in the enterprise, and to educate both business leaders and developers about both case studies about people who have done it correctly, and also people who may not have done it correctly, because we can learn from failure as much, if not more, than success. But also to keep everyone aware of what the latest technology advancements are. So as Zend has new releases, or as Red Hat Linux has new releases, or as Enterprise DB has new releases, we want to definitely be a central resource for all of that information.
Well, thank you for being with us tonight, Marcus. It's been great to talk to you after quite a few years, actually. And I'm glad to hear that you are working on so many initiatives, and that you're doing such great things for the community. I don't think just in Nashville, but hopefully for the United States and the PHP community in general.
Marco, thank you very much for the time. It's an honor to make a return to the podcast, and I am enjoying being on this side of it.